Listening, Unit 4, page 58, D.
You will hear part of a discussion between two language teachers, Jill Bradley and Gerald Downey, who are talking about English as a global language. For questions 1 to 5, choose the answer A, B, C or D, which best fits according to what you hear.
Today in the studio we've got two experienced language teachers, Jill Bradley and Gerald Downey, talking about the way English is developing as a global language. It's English, I believe, but not as we know it.
Yes, that's right. You see, in the past there was always a focus on speaking English like a native. I mean, that was many learners' ultimate goal. And to be honest, that's setting the bar rather high. I mean, how many of us can speak another language really fluently? Now, with English being used as the international language of business, the internet and communication in general, more and more interaction takes place between non-native speakers, and this leads to a new kind of English. Of course, it has to be good enough to communicate, but a lot of the traditional stuff of course books is no longer necessary.
Obviously, it depends on what learners are using English for. Business English, for example, has been around for a long time, with courses helping people to function in international business settings.
Actually, the kind of English spoken between non-native speakers has spread rapidly, and it has led one writer to coin the term globish, to describe a language resembling English, because it is English, but allows people to understand each other easily. I mean, it's a kind of plain English, with only around 1,500 words, and it does away with a lot of the features of English that non-natives struggle with.
Like phrasal verbs, perhaps. How can people communicate without those?
Well, no, some phrasal verbs are indispensable, but there are often more easily understood alternatives, which might seem a bit more formal.
Don't say the spelling has changed too.
No, that would be too revolutionary. The whole point is that today, the native speaker is no longer at an advantage in the communications game. For example, if an Australian businessman says to an Italian colleague, "Fancy a bite to eat," it's likely to cause problems, even if he hasn't got a strong accent and speaks slowly and clearly. The Korean who asks the Italian, "Do you want to eat lunch?" is bound to be understood.
So, you're saying that native speakers also have to learn this global English?
Well, yes, because those people who want to be understood by non-native speakers need to have a certain awareness of how idiomatic and complex their use of the language is. And they could, you know, help a little by speaking in simpler terms. In other words, figurative language, including a lot of idioms, can be replaced with more easily understood terms.
You mean they have to dumb down the language in order to make themselves clear, a bit like talking to a small child?
No, that's not what I mean exactly. It's not patronising in that sense, and a child is not a good example because, going back to our earlier point, native speaker children are quick to pick up phrasal verbs, something which global English learners try to avoid, as you might have noticed. No, it means using simple language and vocabulary whenever you can, and paraphrasing instead of naming something.
Well, there's no doubt that saves on memorising vocabulary, but it makes everything a bit long-winded in my experience. I mean, saying the son of my brother, if you don't know nephew, works pretty well. But what if you want to explain something more complex? Knowing the word key must surely be better than talking about the thing which you use to open a door when someone has locked it.
Obviously, basic vocabulary like that is generally understood. But, you know, when non-native speakers talk together, a lot of paraphrasing has to go on. For example, if I know the word mosquito, but my listener doesn't, then I would explain it as a small insect that bites. And I might even do a sound effect or action to emphasise my meaning. Obviously, that only works with spoken English.
So this kind of English is now free from any cultural associations with English-speaking countries too, I suppose.
Exactly. And that's probably another reason native speakers might feel a bit put out, or should I say upset. You know, there's sometimes a feeling that we own the English language, and actually we don't. Mind you, all this doesn't mean non-native speakers are giving up their mother tongue in favour of English.
And I suppose it goes without saying that a language keeps evolving as it's put to new uses. It's just another fascinating route that English is taking.
Now listen again.
Today in the studio we've got two experienced language teachers, Jill Bradley and Gerald Downey, talking about the way English is developing as a global language. It's English, I believe, but not as we know it.
Yes, that's right. You see, in the past, there was always a focus on speaking English like a native. I mean, that was many learners' ultimate goal. And to be honest, that's setting the bar rather high. I mean, how many of us can speak another language really fluently? Now, with English being used as the international language of business, the internet and communication in general, more and more interaction takes place between non-native speakers, and this leads to a new kind of English. Of course, it has to be good enough to communicate, but a lot of the traditional stuff of course books is no longer necessary.
Obviously, it depends on what learners are using English for. Business English, for example, has been around for a long time, with courses helping people to function in international business settings.
Actually, the kind of English spoken between non-native speakers has spread rapidly, and it has led one writer to coin the term globish, to describe a language resembling English, because it is English, but allows people to understand each other easily. I mean, it's a kind of plain English, with only around 1,500 words, and it does away with a lot of the features of English that non-natives struggle with.
Like phrasal verbs, perhaps. How can people communicate without those?
Well, no, some phrasal verbs are indispensable, but there are often more easily understood alternatives, which might seem a bit more formal.
Don't say the spelling has changed too.
No, that would be too revolutionary. The whole point is that today, the native speaker is no longer at an advantage in the communications game. For example, if an Australian businessman says to an Italian colleague, "Fancy a bite to eat," it's likely to cause problems, even if he hasn't got a strong accent and speaks slowly and clearly. The Korean who asks the Italian, "Do you want to eat lunch?" is bound to be understood.
So you're saying that native speakers also have to learn this global English?
Well, yes, because those people who want to be understood by non-native speakers need to have a certain awareness of how idiomatic and complex their use of the language is. And they could, you know, help a little by speaking in simpler terms. In other words, figurative language, including a lot of idioms, can be replaced with more easily understood terms.
You mean they have to dumb down the language in order to make themselves clear, a bit like talking to a small child?
No, that's not what I mean exactly. It's not patronising in that sense, and a child is not a good example because, going back to our earlier point, native speaker children are quick to pick up phrasal verbs, something which global English learners try to avoid, as you might have noticed. No, it means using simple language and vocabulary whenever you can, and paraphrasing instead of naming something.
Well, there's no doubt that saves on memorising vocabulary, but it makes everything a bit long-winded in my experience. I mean, saying "the son of my brother," if you don't know "nephew," works pretty well. But what if you want to explain something more complex? Knowing the word "key" must surely be better than talking about the thing which you use to open a door when someone has locked it.
Obviously, basic vocabulary like that is generally understood. But, you know, when non-native speakers talk together, a lot of paraphrasing has to go on. For example, if I know the word "mosquito," but my listener doesn't, then I would explain it as a small insect that bites. And I might even do a sound effect or action to emphasise my meaning. Obviously, that only works with spoken English.
So this kind of English is now free from any cultural associations with English-speaking countries too, I suppose.
Exactly. And that's probably another reason native speakers might feel a bit put out, or should I say upset. You know, there's sometimes a feeling that we own the English language, and actually we don't. Mind you, all this doesn't mean non-native speakers are giving up their mother tongue in favour of English.
And I suppose it goes without saying that a language keeps evolving as it's put to new uses. It's just another fascinating route that English is taking.